Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the UCB Digital Podcast. I'm your host, Nate Russell. Welcome back. Hey, everybody. Big week for us here at the podcast this week. Big announcement. The first one, we're going weekly. We're going weekly on this podcast. The show's been quiet for a little while, but we're back. And now we're going to give you a full court press of comedy filmmaking podcasts. Ben Hosley's here. Hey, Ben.
Hey, Nate.
How do you feel about going weekly on this show?
I feel great. I'm looking forward to seeing what kind of cool guests, and we've been throwing around some ideas for concepts.
So we don't quite know yet what we're going to do every week. We just know that we're going to do it every week. So we're banking a lot of conversations with filmmakers to sort of like have some content we can roll out, and then also hopefully have some stuff that's a little bit more responsive to shit that's happening in the world. You know what I mean? So I'm excited about that. Second big announcement for us here at the show, we actually just are starting a partnership with our friends at the Bronx Brewery, which we're excited to start to tell you about, and we'll be telling you about in every episode from here on out. Bronx is now the house beer of the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. So Ben, that means Ben has just been drinking it ever since it arrived here at the offices.
That is very true. And I could tell you firsthand.
You're going on a flight, a sampling tour.
I've flown all over. It's really, honestly, solid craft beer.
Yeah. If anybody out there has been went to DCM last year, Bronx was one of the sponsors of DCM last year. They've been on tap at the Beast Bar for a while, so they're a local company here in New York City that's we've been developing a relationship as another local sort of like comedy community. So we're excited to sort of build on that relationship, and they're going to be a house beer for all of our New York City podcasts here on the network. So all the shows based out of New York are going to be talking about Bronx a little bit, maybe drinking a little Bronx. And we're just excited to sort of keep that going, excited about all the products that they've got. So thanks to Bronx. Check out their website, thebronxbrewery.com. And why not make your next pint a Bronx Brewery, Ben? Why not? All right, let's jump into today's episode. Today we're talking with our friend Zach Broussard. Comedian, writer, filmmaker, longtime New York guy, but he's been out in L.A. I didn't realize this for over 2 years, which is wild. Zach is having a great 2017. A lot of buzz. Great guy. And if you recognize those phrases, you're probably already a fan of his. because one of the things that Zach's been doing that's really cool and unique is that he's been crafting a persona that basically blurs the line between who he is as a person and who this persona is. All of his bits are interactive. They're things that you can participate in. There are a lot of things that you can actually pay him money for, which we talked about in the podcast a little bit. And so it was really exciting to sit down and talk to Zach about, you know, a little bit of his process. Some of the details behind the bits that he's been running for the last couple of years. Recent work includes the top 1,000 comedians of 2016. He's been doing that for 3 years. Ben, have you been on that list?
I don't believe so, actually.
You got to start lobbying. Got to lobby now.
I'm going to make a push. Who was the New York comic, though, that got tricked by it? I can't remember now.
Oh, Rich Voss bought into it the first year and was like angry he wasn't on it.
Yeah.
And that's been become like a little bit of a feud between Zach and Rich Voss, which is really amazing. And again, it's questionable how real any of it is.
Yeah.
But that's what makes it so fun. And if anybody doesn't know the top 1,000 comedians, it's basically a long list of comedians that Zach makes every year. He says he takes about 20 minutes to do it. And he has been increasingly frustrating the world with how he releases it. This year, he put up 10 billboards, real-life billboards across L.A. And so the only way that you could see if you were on the list or if anyone was on the list was to drive around Los Angeles and look for each billboard, which was largely his face with like 100 names in tiny print, 10 of those spread out all across L.A., which is infuriating, but also like really, really, really funny. He also did the SoCal Comedy Fest last year, which is the only comedy festival that doesn't exist. You can apply to it. You can be accepted in it. You can say that you pay him actual money to be in it, but it is not actually happening in any real venues. So everyone who applies is accepted because you don't have to do a show, which is wild. And that was hugely successful last year. And we didn't talk about this, but I'm actually curious how this went. Did you hear about this, Ben? They did a show. He did a show at UCB Sunset. He and Mary a couple of weeks ago, where they used The Secret to try and get an American president who will remain nameless on this show.
Right.
This is a zone free of his name. But an American president to shit himself, to shit his pants. They used The Secret to try to get him to shit his pants.
I did not hear about this, but
the whole audience was involved with it.
That's funny.
It's really funny. I don't know if it worked. I didn't see a news story about that.
That's a vision board I'd like to see.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, but again, another like long line of examples of the kind of stuff Zach's been doing in a really fun way. So we talked to him about those projects, and we also talked to him. This podcast is also timed perfectly with the release of a UCB comedy show that Zach stars in and was one of the writers of, from the digital team in LA called The Buzzards. They made a show that is just released on UCB Comedy's YouTube page called Shooting Strangers, which is a really fun 6-part unscripted reality show where this team of filmmakers, actors and filmmakers and writers go out into the streets of LA with an action movie script and all the production tools they need, but unfortunately they forgot to bring some actors with them. So they have to cast random strangers off the streets of LA to star in their series, which is really fun, and it's out on YouTube right now. So we took the opportunity to talk to Zach about that show and about the rest of his work. We spoke to him via the telephone, which is also a brand new thing for this podcast. We've never done it before. We did it... He was in his garage in Los Angeles, which if you're a New Yorker like me, a garage is someplace that you don't have. So he was in his garage for this one. And let's just jump into it. Our conversation with Zach Broussard.
Well, much like the majority of our collaborations, Zach, we're doing this on the phone 3,000 miles away. So this is just continues a pattern for us. Right?
It is sort of the way I think it's how we work best.
Absolutely. You know what I mean? Absolutely. Well, thanks for taking the time. I'm excited about the new series.
Which we're stoked.
We're planning to release this podcast the same day the series comes out. Why don't you give me the 1-minute sort of pitch of what this show is? Like what is Shooting Strangers?
All right. Well, I think Shooting Strangers is like, The center of the idea is that we're making a movie, an action movie, with people who were not expecting to be in an action movie. And so the idea is that we wrote a very, some would say bad action movie script. I don't know if I'd say directly that it's bad, but it's pretty bad.
Okay. Okay.
And it's I'd say generic would be a good word. It's about hackers, and it's got a real 24 vibe.
Sure.
And the idea is that we had this action movie with all of these very cliche action movie scenes, and that we just show up to random places. Like parks, we use a bunch of different tactics. Like we just trying to ask strangers if like at spur of the moment, if they would be in a movie. And so we would have the scene set up and the actors, that were three on the team were all off book. We're ready to roll.
Yeah.
And then basically we just, walked them right onto a scene. So they didn't have to do the actual hard part of being in a movie, which is like sitting around and waiting all
sure.
the time.
Uh-huh.
The idea is we just sort of walked strangers through the process of getting to be an actor, and it was amazing.
Now, I've got to imagine that, like, being someone who doesn't live in Los Angeles, I have to imagine that this is a lot of people in Los Angeles' dream, right? To not have to go, like, you don't have to go to the audition. The movie's just happening. Come jump in it right now.
Yeah. I think, by and large, those are the type of people that you could tell wanted to be actors too much.
Yeah.
We tended to avoid.
Yeah,
because I think you lose a little bit of the excitement, which is basically the real like gist of the whole thing is like, will someone do something interesting with their day if given the opportunity?
Yeah,
and that's sort of what it kind of boiled down to. It's like most people were like clearly too like drawn in, and they were like absolutely not. But you could tell that there's a certain type of person. It just like were like sure, why the hell not? And they weren't actor. The best people were not actors at all. They were just like regular Joe Blows who were just like, one lady was waiting for her car to get fixed. So she had like an hour to kill.
Sure.
And I think we really made her day.
I've got to imagine though, that it's a different experience. If you guys had made this in, in Topeka, though I imagine you would have gotten a completely different type of response. Like, there is an element of LA where it's like production's happening a lot and people are a little bit more like on board just from the jump, right?
I think it like greases the wheels a bit where you don't have to explain what making a movie is too much. They seem to kind of get that at least.
Yeah.
And so, and they're also, I think you're right in the sense that they, it's sort of like, oh, sure, I'll do that. Me too. Like they get to get in on the fun.
Yeah.
There's an element of that, which is pretty rad. Yeah. I don't know. I think the idea was just sort of like challenging people to do something weird with their day.
Yeah.
And that seems to be what it turned out to be. So each episode, we kind of, each episode kind of revolves around a different like casting tactic. So like the opening episode is us at a park for like a giant explosion scene. And so we pretty much just ask people who are hanging out at the park.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like our intro into the premise. And then as the episodes progress, we sort of got more in depth and like a little weirder with how we did the casting.
Sure.
Just to try to shake things up. So we have an episode where it's like basically an interrogation scene where we went to a Home Depot where there were like day laborers, like they were just out there like to work. And we asked them how much they would charge to act. And so we just paid a guy what he would make to like lay bricks or what he was offering to do.
Yeah.
And he was awesome. And he just came with us and he was so down to do something different. And it was like, those types of things were really neat. And so we had one day we actually, we casted entirely by Natalie Palamides, one of our actresses.
Yeah.
Signed up on Tinder and like started like flirting with guys on Tinder and asked them to like come to a date. And they didn't realize they were coming to be in a movie, an action movie.
That's such a vulnerable position for everybody to be in.
Yeah, it was pretty weird. I think by and large, that was the weirdest episode to be part of. And we also had like Postmates drivers where we just straight up ordered meals at Postmates. And when they showed up, we paid, you know, we obviously got the meal and we were like, hey, would you mind sticking around for 20 minutes?
Yeah.
And two for two, both Postmates drivers said yes. No questions asked.
That's, I mean, it's really cool, man. I love this. I love this series. And it's such a fun, like style of comedy and comedy approach too, because the majority of the show is the sort of behind the scenes making of the movie. Right. So it sort of has that reality unscripted feel.
Right.
Can you talk
sort of like a Project Greenlight feel?
Yeah.
Half of the people in it were complete randos.
Yeah. It's a little bit like sausage making, right? It's like a sausage making series where it's like, you're seeing how the sausage gets made. And then even you're saying that the sausage itself might be a little bit like hacky in a way, but that's also a choice, right?
Yeah. I think it was sort of just to write something that always felt like such an 80s movie or something, like just something that just was like, we didn't want a lot of nuance because we wanted these guys, we didn't want them to have to interpret any like detailed characters. We wanted them to get it pretty immediately.
Yeah.
You know, they knew what was going on. You know, a lot of them, one of the recurring gags in the series is that we have like one main character who's the head of the hacking division at, it's a cyber patrol. So he's like the head of the CIA kind of. And, but he's in so much of the script that what we ended up doing is just buying the same jacket and wig and having a different stranger play him in almost every episode. And so there's like things like that. It's like those things needed to be broad enough where like those guys know what they're walking into.
Yeah. Well, it's very cool, man. I'm excited that people are going to get a chance to see it. Let's talk through the process a little bit.
Sure.
So, because you know, you came into, this is one of the cooler things that came out of this last iteration of the digital teams, I think. In part because it is such a fun sort of like dynamic and really like multi-layered, you know, production. So maybe walk me through like how this idea came together with a group of people who, a lot of you guys didn't know each other, right? How many of these people did you know going into it?
You know what? I think I only knew Jess Lane, one of the actresses and writers walking in from New York, but everybody else was just kind of like either creator, writer, performers, or like doing like kind of editors or crew kind of tip positions and directors, all from LA. So it was cool to meet a bunch of different filmmakers. And our whole mission when our team was set up was that to do something edgy and absurd and unscripted.
Yeah.
And that was sort of like the realm that we were kind of tasked to live in. And so there was like a month or two long process of just like pitching ideas and throwing them against the wall. And I think what we kind of all settled on was the idea of like the unscripted element is it's more interesting. The idea of using real people seemed to be the thing that we centered on. So there was a lot of ideas of like a talk show in the back of a truck that we just move around and like interview people in. And sure. It was just sort of trying to find a way that felt fresh that hadn't been done.
Sure.
And so we ended up just sort of honing in on this. I think this came from a nugget of a smaller pitch, and then organically we kind of all came up with this thing together, which is like writing this action movie, which sort of lets everybody do their thing to like the nth degree, where it lets the editors kind of really flex their muscles, lets the directors like have a little fun.
Yeah.
So often it's just like the sketch actors or whatever kind of who get to goof around the most.
Sure.
And so this sort of let everybody just kind of really wing it and kind of have a little really kind of strut their stuff a little bit.
And you guys are the stars of the show too. Not just the actors in the movie, but the sort of the production crew are the stars of the actual shooting.
Which I really liked about the series too. This is my second digital team. And the last one was I just made a web series, which was great. I had a great time. But there's so much work that goes into creating these series.
Yeah.
And it always feels like just the people in front of the camera get the most out of it a little bit.
Sure.
They get to show it off a little more directly. And so this sort of was a nice way to kind of turn the camera around and show really the process. I mean, how many hands are involved? I mean, a lot of this stuff couldn't have been done without like our two producers, Brett Kushner and Jackie, are just so good at what they do because they're like actually professional producers. We were actually allowed to do, I mean, they were just, it's interesting because sometimes you have a good idea is really limited by producers. And so it's really cool to have like two guys who know what they're doing. And it was pretty rad.
It also, and here's a question, how much in terms of the execution of the show was like thought of in putting yourselves into comedic situations? Because the other thing I noticed in this show was that like, I thought Brett was one of the stars of this thing. I thought he was great. Every time he was in it, it felt
he's
like
so funny.
He's so funny, but it's also like, so like it's real too. Like he's in an awkward situation and that's what's fun about it. Was there a lot of intent towards like putting yourselves in that vulnerable position, or was that something that happened?
A little bit. Honestly, I think originally we really thought that the strangers were pretty exclusively going to be the stars.
Yeah.
And then when we shot that first episode, which is the one in the park, and Brett is so funny and I think that's a big part of how that kind of expanded, which is like those little quirks and then the little like, you just realize that us having fun with the process is sort of like that we're the wheel that had the wrench thrown in the spokes, you know what I mean? And so we're part of what makes it interesting. And so, I mean, him just talking to the Postmates guys is so funny too. Yeah. It's interesting because it allowed us to spread around the screen time a little bit across the board. And I think that's pretty cool.
I've got to also believe that part of it is, I mean, you know, having done some stuff like together and also like having done some stuff in this vein where it's like you're interacting with real people, it also is, it's hard to interact with real people in a comedy environment without making them the joke, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's sort of been my mantra, like my personal stuff is that I really like interactions. I think that's such like interacting with the public in some kind of way and not making them the target of some kind of joke.
Yeah.
Is like very tough, but it's like a lot of it is just like being sincere.
Yeah.
It's just sort of, I mean, there were some people who weren't on board and that's fine, but we didn't pester them if they weren't on board. A lot of it is finding the people. It's like giving yourself time to mine through the people to find the ones that are gonna play along.
Right.
Because then it's sort of no holds barred because everybody's, you know, it's like consent, you know, we're all good and we're all on board.
Yeah. And it's also the more that you're putting yourselves out there, like, I think that's why that, the Tinder episode works so well, and that concept works well in part because like it's Natalie as much as the people, she's asking people to be vulnerable and be sort of like to opt into this experience, but she's also an equal participant. You can see how uncomfortable she is as a human being, not even as an actor, as a human being in that episode.
Yeah. I mean, I think that also goes in line with the Home Depot episode, which is just like Nick and I going there was like, there's a real level that we didn't want to be like disrespectful or like, I mean, there's a tone that could have taken where I think it could have been really bad.
Sure.
And we talked about it for a long time to make sure that it's like, we're literally just like, we're just looking for someone who's into having fun. And if they're not, that's it.
Yeah.
That's where we draw the line. We walk away. We were going to do it. We had a backup idea, I think, just because we didn't know if that one was actually going to play. Same with Tinder.
Right.
And so a lot of these things were just sort of stabbed in the dark. And then we found ourselves pleasantly surprised by the people you meet.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. What would you say the balance is between just like looking back on it? What's the balance between how much you guys had planned and how much of what actually winds up in the show is following the fun of what happens in the process? If you could ratio.
I honestly think so. That first episode is pretty much as planned, probably 70%.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's a great setup to the series, but it is like the least exciting.
Sure.
And so what I think the other episodes have is they're like kind of 25-30% planned because we just had the conceit, really.
Yeah.
We knew what we had to, we knew we had the scenes and we had our conceit, and then, which is like our casting technique, which is like, you know, which is the final episode is we literally get a white van and we drive around and try to convince strangers to get into a white van, which is like, we wanted to like raise the bar because it had been, honestly, it'd been relatively easy. I don't know if that's because it's LA or just we're nice people, but we wanted to really take it up a notch. And honestly, it was so funny because it was, there's really no nice way to get out of a van and ask a woman to get into it.
Sure.
There's just, it's weird. It's always weird. And no matter how sweet you are about it. And, I think that like, those were the things that were super fun. And I think the 70% that was kind of unplanned, which is kind of based on reactions and the type of people you get. I mean, that's to me is where the juiciest stuff.
Yeah.
And that's just so weird. So weird.
Yeah, no, for sure. And that's also a great sort of like, I love that van bit because it's such a good comedic premise too, for everything you know about white vans. And, you know, you were offering candy by the end of it, right? That's such a funny idea.
Yeah, that was the big tactic.
Yeah, that's great.
I mean, also you have Natalie Felomidis who's just dressed like an insane person because she plays the villain in the movie. She's like the villain in this action movie. So she's got like an eye patch.
Yeah.
And like, she's wearing like a leather shirt with like metal studs on it, and she's trying to coax people into hanging out with her, and it's not the most successful.
We
found interesting tactics, which was basically certain people were better at it,
sure,
because they just were like could small talk beforehand to like let people's defenses kind of drop. Natalie was very bad at it because she looked insane.
and let me ask, in that last episode there's a little bit of an on-camera rivalry that you have with your special effects man, Eric Bauer. How much of that is, how much of that has held over in time? You guys still feuding or is that?
It's worse for him because when we're done shooting, I'm just the writer and actor in it. So when we're done shooting, this was like months ago, I just walked away.
Yeah.
I was done. And he had to not only, you know, work on all the special effects, he had to work on special effects on that and watch that footage of me taunting him. So I can imagine that we're not doing great, but we're going to be fine.
He's a magician though, man. Those effects look great.
He's incredible, man. Eric Bauer is so, so good at what he does. And that's what's been really cool about being on a team out here in LA is like how many guys are pretty much, all of these people for the most part have their foot in like the industry where they're actually working, they're hustling, and they have like, they have some real skill sets. And it was really cool to make, I mean, Will Reese came in and had such a good eye for this like unscripted kind of like editing, which I think was really, really unique. He did the first cut that we were all really like blown away by. And we're like, ended up mimicking all of our cuts after, just because I think he's done a lot of it. And so you have this like skill set across the board that I think really, really started to shine.
Yeah, that's awesome. It seems like it was really like a really strong confluence of using everybody's skill sets between, you know, obviously like the writing and performing side of it with you guys on camera, as well as like, you know, as we talked about those special effects and Jackie's enthusiasm and skill set. And we haven't talked about Nick Stanich's input on
this
too.
Yeah, he did actually a pretty bad job. We didn't talk about that, but no, Nick was incredible. Nick, I mean, that's an incredible task, because not only he's basically directing two things.
He was directing both the short and the unscripted and behind the scenes. Unscripted. That's awesome.
Basically, I mean, it's kind of like screws with your mind, because they're two different things.
Yeah.
And so you have to like, also like when you, on a standard shoot, you just work through your shot list.
Yeah.
But you're constantly filming this like organic thing that's happening around your actual shoot.
Yeah.
And just kind of trying to piece it together on the fly. Yeah. It's really cool, man. I think for all of us, it's sort of like your next level version. It's like an upgrade of your skill set when you can do that.
Yeah.
In a world where you insert these strangers who can kind of deviate things.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, for sure.
And so I think that's pretty, and I think, you know, it from like reality shows, you can tell how much that they actually pre-script to simplify that.
Sure.
And we did not do a lot of that, and that probably would have simplified the editing process, but it would have made the show a lot less fun, because we ended up going down some rabbit holes that were just silly and very fun.
Yeah. I mean, let's talk about how this ties into your workout, you know, beyond just this series too, because I also see a lot of you in this show and in the series and in its taste and in its approach. Right. I mean, this definitely like ties into the kind of stuff you've been doing outside, you know, on your own as well too. Right. The sort of like interactive stuff.
I think so.
Yeah. I mean, 2017 is a hell of a year for you so far, man.
It's been a big year. A lot of buzz for me.
A lot of buzz.
So I don't know if you want to talk about it, but it's like, every year I do the list of the top 1,000 comedians, which is, you know, that way every comedian gets to be on a list, which was the original intent, but it turns out there's way more than 1,000. So it's way sadder if you don't make a list of 1,000 people.
Well, here's a question I have about that. Cause I mean, I love that. And I think that's like definitely one of the, you know, most publicized things that you've done right independently, but when you go back to the seed of that idea, 2014, when you're first putting that together, right? How much, like for yourself, how much of that idea are you looking to sort of have this kind of follow-up on? Did you have any idea that you were going to do this 3 years in a row, or was it like kind of a throwaway, like, yeah, let's see what happens. And then you followed the fun type of experience.
Yeah. It was 100% a throwaway, where I basically had an idea on Friday night, and then I was like kind of talking about it with my girlfriend, and she was like, yeah, that's probably worth doing. And so I ended up just like staying up for like 20 hours, just compiling a list of 1,000 names. I mean, I did it. I have like a similar thing prior to that, where I just like promoted a tweet.
Yeah.
I like teased the tweet for a month just to try to get it as many retweets as possible. And the idea of just like creating a nugget of something fun and then putting it out into the world, and then interacting with the strangers and like people online as it's out there is sort of the thing that I'm most obsessed with, which is like, cause you can't plan that. And I think that's sort of like a reaction to doing like sketch for so long and stand up for so long, where so much of it is sort of just like this rehearsed script.
Yeah.
And I love the idea of basically it seemed like a nice mix of like improv and sketch, where I'm basically just putting out a premise and just seeing where it goes. And so I had no idea I was going to do it again. And then basically it just was popular enough that I felt obligated. And I was like, it's like popular enough. And I was like, I don't know what else I'm doing. I might as well do this thing. And so then the second year I did the top 1,000s, where it was a click through.
Yeah.
And so to find out if you made the list, you had to click through 1,000 pages. And that was pretty stupid. And this past year, I put it on billboards across LA. And if you wanted to find out if you made the top 1,000 comedians of 2016, you had to be in LA, which was a big argument that I was trying to make to comedians.
Yeah.
Is that if they took their career seriously, they would obviously already be in LA. So.
I think what's interesting about the execution, because one, dude, that's a lot of pressure to follow up on next year. That's a big, the jump between year two and three there, the bar is now pretty high, dude. You got to follow
that
up.
Even in my head, I was like, it'll be the perfect like trilogy. And then now that was so popular that I think I just have to keep doing.
You got to follow it up. Yeah.
I don't know, man. I mean, there definitely going to be some kind of dip. I don't know if it could beat that, but there are ideas on the board that
you got
I left
a year
out there that I can go back to.
Yeah, you got a year to figure it out.
The well's not dry. I think I can do it.
I also think that it's interesting though, because even inside of that, right? The joke,
right.
Like there's a sub joke inside of the structure of this too, which is that you're kind of acting like an asshole, right? The second year you make people click through. The third year you've got to be in LA. You made a lot of people angry this year with that.
Yeah, I think honestly, and what's so fun is I'm really obsessed with, I think it's just because I grew up watching a lot of wrestling that I'm really obsessed with heel turns. Like I just love when a baby face turns heel.
Yeah.
And I'm really obsessed with it. And I also think that I don't necessarily think I'm a good guy. Like I think I'm a fine guy, but I think I come off like a very nice guy.
Yeah.
And
I'd say
so. I think that is I think I'm a nice guy. I think I'm fine, but I think that really helps me. It sets me up to do these heel turns in a fun way where I think that the first year I genuinely like, oh, so I'll talk about the tweet that I promoted. It was like an Easter 420 tweet. It was not very good. And I think that's why I promoted it, because I had a joke that I knew was not very good, but I was like, maybe if I just put my full marketing degree into it, maybe I can pull this off. And so the idea is that it was like Christ is risen, because Easter fell on 420. It was very stupid.
Great.
And the idea is that I wanted it to get 420 retweets. And I was like so positive, and I was like, this is about us, we can do this. But then when it reached 421 retweets, I turned heel and I got to yell at people to unretweet it.
Yeah.
And I thought that was the best time I've ever had in my life, is yelling at people for retweeting a tweet.
Because it passed the threshold that you wanted. No,
exactly.
That's great.
And so I got to do this for this past year with the billboard, because the billboards are only up for a month. And so when the billboards went down, I basically, now the only way to find out if you made the list is to Venmo me $2. And I can tell you right now that I've made over $400 from people Venmoing to see if they made the list. And there's nothing sadder than responding to someone's Venmo like and telling them that they did not make a list of 1,000 comedians.
Oh, you put yourself in such a bad situation there, but that's
funny. I mean, I'm an honest man, and I'm not gonna sugarcoat it.
Yeah. Are any of those
and
billboards?
I give them a little advice. You know, I tell them they didn't have a very good year, but there's always next year.
Now, are any of those billboards still up just because nobody else has bought the ad space, or are they all down?
I think one is still up, but they've all been slowly coming down. So there's still one. I think it's like 300 to 400. So if you're around LA and you think you might have made that
specific
chunk,
check it out. And is
definitely check it out.
Did you get any graffiti on them?
No graffiti.
No defacing.
I tried. I would love nothing more than those names to be covered up even slightly.
So,
you know anybody in any local gangs, please tell them to hit it up.
One left. One last chance. A lot of gang members listen to this show. So,
yeah, that's true. It's very popular.
Prime audience. Mm-hmm. even the taking of money, man, that's such a funny position to put yourself in, because again, it puts you in a position to be kind of like, you're actually taking money from people. Because the money from the billboards come from SoCal? Was that what happened? The SoCal Comedy
Festival?
Yeah, so
I ran a fake comedy festival last August where anyone who submitted got to say they were in the festival. All you had to do is submit. And if you submitted $20, you get to say you headlined. And I made, I think I made $2,000 from that fake festival. Now, the billboards cost $3,000. So it's still like not a good business plan. And so I definitely need a bigger turnout at next year's fest to make up for it.
So the fest is coming back. The fest is coming back.
I think there's a possibility. I think it's not official, but there's a real possibility that the fest is going to come back, hopefully bigger and better.
All right.
There's a couple ideas on the wall that we're looking at.
Okay.
But Yeah, man. I also think this, the first time I took money was for that, one of my first bits, I did I released a comedy single.
Yeah.
Which was just, it was like a physical CD wrapped with a UPC code. And it had one joke on it that was 17 seconds long. And I charged $9.99 for it. And I basically just dared people to buy it. And you can still go to comedysingle.com. It's still available. I will mail you a single, one joke. And there's also a dance mix of that joke. So it's like straight up single style.
You were in New York when you did that bit, right?
It was one of the first things right before I left. Yeah, that was like early 2014.
So you traveled with, you brought all those CDs across the country?
Yeah. My girlfriend is not happy about it. I was like, I made room in a very tiny car for 60 CDs.
In 2014, when that came out, CDs were already not really a thing.
Oh, they were so useless. So useless. So I definitely, you know, I don't know if it's worth it, but my whole argument is that, you know, people get so many jokes for free on Twitter.
Sure.
It seemed like it's the right thing to do, is to support an artist.
Look, I'm sure that what you'll be able to do soon enough is like make it like the 10th anniversary CD special, you know, and
that's really interesting.
Get rid of your surplus, autograph them. You know what I mean?
Maybe drop it to like $8.99.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe give a slight discount.
Yeah, get some hype going around that and offload them, man.
If you're a veteran, it's $8.99. So if you served.
There you
I
go.
I would never overcharge you.
That's right.
That seems wrong.
I tell you what,
I'm a good guy.
Some of this stuff borders on like you just being a bad scammer.
Yeah, I think so. I think, it's a little bit of that, but I think I'm just bored. Maybe. I think people are bored at work.
Sure.
And the least I can do is, you know, while I'm in between, you know, auditions, just try and entertain them and try to get them to spend $9.99. I think it's the least I can do.
Yeah, $9.99 at a time. Cool, man.
$9.99 at a time. That's my secret. That's my Ponzi scheme.
The secret is out. Well, hey, man, like, thanks so much for taking the time. I appreciate it. I'm really excited about the new show.
Shooting Strangers is going to be so great. I'm so pumped that it's coming out, and I think it really lines up with all this stuff. It's just like having a weird time with a bunch of nice and weird people.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I hope people will check it out and check out Zach on Twitter. Where are you at on Twitter?
At Zach Broussard.
At Zach Broussard. A-C-H. Easy.
Check it out, man. Thanks a lot, man.
Thanks, dude.
All right, that'll do it for episode number 36 of this podcast. Thanks to Zach for sitting down, talking about Shooting Strangers and about the rest of his work. Those CDs are still available, and I believe the website is still up. So you can buy one right now if you want. 24 hours a day, you can buy one. Great Christmas presents, birthday presents, graduation presents coming up, all that sort of stuff. And check out Shooting Strangers on UCB's YouTube page, YouTube/UCB Comedy. All 6 episodes and the action movie are there. A lot of great work by a lot of great filmmakers in LA, and we're really excited about this show. Thanks to the Bronx Brewery for being the official house beer of the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. Visit www.thebronxbrewery.com for information on all of their craft beers. And hey, make your next pint of Bronx, y'all. We are weekly, as we said. Follow us. We're on Facebook and Twitter at UCB Digital Podcast. Give us a like, a subscribe, a rate, and a review on iTunes. We don't know what the hell we're doing every week. So if you've got some ideas or you want to participate in this show, we're an open book, baby. So reach out to us. Let us know what you'd like to see and how you'd like to be involved. As always, you can follow UCB Comedy across all sorts of social platforms at UCB Comedy. And until next time, we'll see you on the internet.
This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.